Vectis Radio. Vectis Radio. FM 104.6, bringing the island's community together.
The Mid-Morning Show is proudly sponsored by PC Consultants, the island's leading provider of IT service, consultancy and support to businesses, public sector and private clients across the island. PC Consultants, an award-winning company celebrating 25 years in business.
It's 12:05. It's a Thursday, and we have another parliamentary candidate. So we've got Bob Seely. We're going to introduce Bob in a moment, but you may be aware that there's a little matter of a general election in just a couple of weeks' time, and we're trying to work out where we put our cross. So that's why we're conducting interviews with all six parliamentary candidates. We've got four down and two to go. Daryl Pitcher comes next week, but right now we're going to introduce Bob Seely. Afternoon, Bob.
Good morning to you. Can I just start by apologising slightly? I am slightly losing my voice here, so I hope it survives through the hour. I shall do my best.
Don't apologise, Bob. It sounds sexy. You shouldn't have said that. You should have said, basically, you sound like this all the time.
Keep talking.
Now, we've got your phone there is buzzing. If I could ask you just remove the phone. That's all right. It's going out on the airwaves.
Should I put it on silent?
Yeah, I'll put it on silent, if that's okay. Yeah,
absolutely.
Anyway, what we're doing with everyone else, Bob, is we're making them nice and feel nice and comfortable. It's a nice, easy time. It's nothing, we're not going to fight or anything like that. I'll just move that microphone around so you can, there you go. And we're just going to say, who's Bob Seely? But interesting, tell us a bit about you.
Where do you want me to start? Are we talking about my life history thus far? Or?
Yeah, just a quick briefing. Because people will say, well, who's Bob Seely?
Well, for the last 2.5 years, I've had the privilege of being a Member of Parliament. And it is a fantastic and wonderful honour. Before that, I spent 10 years as quite an accidental soldier, funnily enough. I was going to do the army properly when I was about a teenager. I was going to go in and I did all my pre-officer exams and all that. And then I decided I didn't want to do it. But when I was 35, I joined the TA and I got mobilised in about 2008 to go to Iraq, and I had a very fulfilling tour, and I spent 8-9 months out there, and the army said, do you want to work for us full time? So they took me out of the reserve and put me into a regular slot in the army, and sometimes the army now takes reservists and puts them into regular slots for 6 months, a year or however long, but I ended up basically doing a decade of working for the armed forces, and I did the second Iraq campaign, which I just mentioned, and then I was involved a little bit in the Libya campaign, and then I went to Afghan to do, I think, about 3 or 4 short tours, but I did about 7-8 months, I think, overall there.
Okay.
And then for the last 3 years, prior to becoming the island's MP, I was working on the ISIS campaign, the campaign against the ISIS terrorist group in the Middle East, and I spent about a quarter of my time in Erbil. I used to live near Chilton. I now live in near Bryston, a little village near Bryston. And whilst I was doing that, I was also balancing that with being a local councillor. So it was a bit of a difficult transport sometimes, because I was in Iraq, come back, sort of come down to the island for a council meeting. But I won my council seat twice in Central White, which I was delighted to do, and it was lovely to serve those four parishes. What else? I relaxed by playing the guitar. I used to play the piano, right. And then about a year and a half ago, I thought, I don't know, sort of midlife crisis or what, but I thought, I'm going to buy a guitar. I have to say, I just fell in love with playing the guitar, and I find it very sort of therapeutic. So I sit there watching old comedies on the telly in front of the fire and strumming away. Sometimes I do turn the telly off to do a bit more strumming, but it's really...
You must have seen some sights then in those places you mentioned.
I have to say, I found the army very, very fulfilling, and it's a structured environment, and I thoroughly recommend it. I mean, it was occasionally quite scary. You had people trying to harm you and kill you. I didn't get shot at very often. I mean, once or twice, I think. But I used to get rocketed because I was in bases, certainly in Iraq. I got rocketed a couple of dozen times. I was on a base that was being attacked, I think once in Afghan, and very occasionally in the other places as well. So, you have moments of fear. But for the most time, you are in a great environment where you're all working together as part of a team towards common goals. I enjoyed it, and I thoroughly, for men and women, I thoroughly recommend the services.
Okay, can I just say...
Not perfect, nothing is, but they're very good.
You keep going off microphone.
I'm sorry.
You're going
okay.
over there and, you know...
I did a school assembly this morning, and I did say to everyone that I'm the worst fidgeter, so, you know...
All right, no, you carry on fidgeting, it's fine.
I will try to keep my focused on the microphone.
Okay, my son's in the services, and he is at the moment. He is off the coast of Venezuela.
Is he in Royal Navy?
He's based at Marchwood Logistics.
Good for him.
He went last year.
So he's Royal. He's Loggies. He's Royal Logistics Corps.
Yes, yeah.
And that's the TA. That's part of the Isle of Wight Rifles. So they're part of that's a Royal Port Regiment, isn't it?
Yes.
Fantastic. Good for him, because they're based in Marchwood. And whereabouts is he in the in Venezuela? Is he on a Royal Navy ship or something?
He is on a Royal Navy ship, yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah. I should remember which one, but I can't.
Well, we both should. I should as well.
I'll look it up online when we're talking.
The reason why I bring that up is because how does it make you feel when somebody questions your time in the army? Because I know how I felt. You know, it's a kick in the teeth for everybody that is in the services, their parents as well, and their family.
I'm the Member of Parliament. Well, I used to be. I'd love to be again on December the 12th, December the 13th. Whether you like it or not, social media exists. Sometimes social media is more antisocial than social, and there are people who are always going to attack you, sometimes with justification. They're going to criticise how you vote in Parliament, or they're going to criticise what you say and what you do, which is absolutely fair game. Mm. You know, and that's why I think as far as I can see, all the other candidates are busy editing out negative comments on their Facebook site. I tend to keep it up because it's good that other people can see some of the abuse that comes in and some of the good critical questioning that comes in as well. So I take a dividing line between fair comment in a democracy, sometimes which is surprisingly blunt, but fair game, and you know, you've got to develop a thick skin. What I don't like so much is the people who anonymously go online and frankly tell lies about you. There's a former candidate in my patch who tells everyone that I live in Oxford. I've never lived in Oxford in my life.
I bet you like it, because it's nice.
I mean, it's pathetic. I mean, Oxford or Orkneys or Outer Mongolia. Then there's, I think, one of the candidates tried to trash my military career. I mean, whatever. My military career, I mean, I enjoyed my military career, and the Queen was kind enough to give me an MBE 2 or 3 years ago for it. I was really proud of it, not because I did anything, I'm not saying I did anything over and above anyone else, but actually it was really great to be part of that team and to serve your country, and I had a great sense of pride. I pushed to get mobilised during the worst days of the Iraq war, because I was basically a civvy in London. I was in the TA, I was in the reserve, and I was looking at the radio, or looking at the telly and listening to the radio, and I could see that our guys and girls were getting a really hard time in Iraq. And actually I really wanted to be there, because I thought, I'm in the wrong place, I want to make a difference, and I should be out there. I'm a reservist, I should be volunteering and pushing. And I'm very glad that I did get mobilised, because actually it was a really good thing for me.
Good.
And you know, being able to work in the military gives you an experience, and not every MP has nowadays, and not everyone has in this country. But also, you know, I worked a little bit with the Foreign Office, a little bit with DFID and the other agencies, and that gave me an insight into how we work abroad. And okay. I wrote a guide to our foreign policy early this year, because we're not integrated enough, we're not joined up, and it was that first-hand experience that enabled me to do that.
Okay, let's move on. Talk us through a typical week. You know, you've been MP for the last 2.5 years.
That's such a horrible question, because I never know quite how to answer it. I'll go back up to London sometimes on a Sunday night, sometimes on a Monday morning. I used to do surgeries on a Monday morning, so I used to meet constituents on a Monday morning. Since I got a very junior government job, that's been a little bit more difficult. But I normally have my surgeries, I meet constituents and go out and visit stuff on sometimes on a Thursday afternoon, always on a Friday, occasionally on a Saturday morning. But I'm, you know, out and about on Saturdays very often. So I think this weekend I'm going up to Diwali celebrations, and I'm looking forward to, there'll be about 300 people up there in Gurner Pines, really looking forward to that. And I think I'm sure I'm doing something in the morning, can't quite remember what. But When I was your Member of Parliament, you'd be Monday morning, you'd be in the office, you'd be going through a backlog of emails, because I think we get between 100 and 200 emails a day, and the office manager, my wonderful office manager, Joe, will be going through those and saying, right, Bob, you need to answer this, this and this, and I'll sometimes get on the phone to constituents, and I'll be writing letters to ministers. A lot of what I do is about meeting government officials, because one of the things I said when people first put their confidence in me to represent the island was that we need to get the island a higher profile, because Whitehall doesn't listen to us. The Scottish Islands get a much better deal from government than we do, and we've never had a decent deal. And I was the first Member of Parliament for the Isle of Wight for the last century, forever, to have actually got a recognition from Whitehall, from the local government ministry, that there are additional costs in providing government services on the Isle of Wight. Now, we need to get further and work out how much money that is, but in the fair funding formula that published by the Ministry for Housing, Communities and Local Government, they've now, first time ever, specifically stated the Isle of Wight's an island. So I spend a lot of my time having meetings with government officials saying, what are you going to do to support the island more? Because we are overlooked. And this is structural, and it doesn't matter whether it's been Labour or the Conservatives or the Coalition. We don't get the additional funding. And so one of the things I've been doing is making that case, but also making sure it's fact-based, based preferably on academic reviews, which are rigorous and professional assessments of our additional need. And I hope, I hope it's true to say that I've been delivering on that.
Where are we with it, though? Because my worry is, Bob, okay, people are talking about the Ireland deal, people are talking about you've got the ear of Boris Johnson, there's a deal in the pipeline. You know, if just say, for instance, they don't get elected, is that deal dead in the water, or have we already got it over the line?
I hope that any Member of Parliament for the island will continue to fight for the island. As far as I'm concerned, I'm already delivering a better deal for the island. So I'm just going to rattle through them. We saved Sandown School from closure, working with that community and working with the council. We got priority status for Arts Council funding. For the first time in our history, we got recognition from Whitehall that we're an island. We've got guaranteed rebuild of Ryde Railway Pier, which is between 20 and 25 million. We got 48 million for St Mary's Hospital, where I supported the excellent NHS bid, and I made sure they had government meetings, and I sat down with ministers saying, you need to support this. We got the future of the Island Line guarantee, 26 million. That rebuild will start next year, and it'll be rebuilt within the next 2 years. We save shipbuilding on the island because we've got Venture Keys, a Columbine building. We're buying it, and we're buying it at our price, not the price that Homes England wanted. And that's taken 15 years for us to sort that problem, but within 2 years of me becoming MP, I hope we've sorted it. Again, working with the council with that. But it was me ringing up those government ministers and saying, look, if this falls through, I'm holding you responsible. We've got a commitment from Boris for an island deal for a bit more money, whether it's half a million or 10 million, we don't know yet. And the ninth thing, we got a really good project, £150,000, not a lot of money. It's made a big difference to 19 primary schools by improving maths results, which I'm really proud of as well. So there are 9 good achievements. So I'm already delivering what I consider to be an island deal, which is a better deal for the folks of the Isle of Wight. But if I can get more permanent money coming in year on year, that's also the next goal.
Okay, all of that sounds promising, but we've still got, you know, too many people using food banks.
Yeah.
And we've got 9,000 odd kids that are in child poverty.
Okay. Food banks. The best way to... You're right. I mean, the food bank issue. We have nearly full employment in this country. We have very high rates of employment. And we have very low rates of unemployment. You have to go back to the early 1970s to have similar rates of unemployment. So economically, we're doing incredibly well. However, the problem has been, for parts of the last decade, especially after the financial crash, wages have not kept pace with inflation. Now, the really good news is, for the last 20 months, wages have been outpacing inflation. So people are getting richer again, and if you're in your work, you're doing better and better. But the food bank issue, one of the critical reasons for this was that people were working, but they weren't necessarily seeing the benefit of working because inflation was sometimes outstripping wages. And so that really was one of the fundamental problems. Related to that, there's a second problem, which people don't necessarily like to talk about. It is related to Brexit. We've had, for the last 10, 15 years, we've had wave after wave of very able, energetic, capable people from Eastern Europe willing to work for relatively low wages, which nationally, not necessarily specifically on the island, but nationally has suppressed wage inflation. Now, if that's going to come to an end when we leave the European Union, the hope is, and there is some evidence that this is happening already, but the hope is that that will push up wages for the lower earners. Because if you're a boss, you can't just hire somebody from Bulgaria if it's more difficult for Bulgarians to come here. There are going to be exceptions. So clearly for the NHS, there's going to be big exceptions. And for workers in agricultural seasonal labourers, there will be exceptions to make sure that we keep those folks coming in. Yeah, but in many other places, we're going to have to actually work harder to train up our own folks and give our own folks an opportunity as well post-Brexit. So I think that would be good for wages for some of the poorest people in this country.
So when do you see, because there'll be people out there, and I feel for them. We kind of see it firsthand. We used to do the youth offer for the council, and then the funds dried up because they weren't getting enough from central government and so on. And then we have to say to kids, look, we can't do this anymore. So they're out on the street. Then you know, some of them are throwing stones at Southern Vectis buses and stuff like that. This is what's going on. And I'm just thinking, if we'd have had the funds for that in the first place, none of that would have happened. And, you know, so we've got to look after the young. We've got to look after the future. And my worry is that, you know, we've got 9,000. Well, hopefully next year it won't be as much, you know, if things are going in the right direction. Because that's too many people.
Let's give you some context. So one of the problems with government statistics when it comes to poverty is that in a recession, technically there are fewer people in poverty. Because the way that the poverty figures are calculated is relative to earnings and relative to pay. So the better off we do, bizarrely, sometimes the higher the poverty figures appear if your earnings are less than half of the median wage, for example. So if you're looking at absolute poverty, the numbers of people, families and young people in absolute poverty have been going down. And relative poverty is a useful figure. But absolute poverty is also a really important figure. And the record of that is really good. So more children than ever before are living in a working home, one where you've got a mum or a dad working, and that's about 9 out of 10 kids. Well, the number of children in workless households is actually about 1 in 11. And that's going down because more people are in work. So the way that you support folks, be it young folks or old folks, is to keep the economy going, getting people in work and having a benefit system that supports folks in work. So I slightly dispute the figures, because the figures are relative. The better we do, bizarrely, the higher the poverty figures can appear. And bizarrely, when we go into recession, poverty rates go down because people are
overall. I get what you're saying, but we can't just choose which figures we take on board and like and then discard the rest.
But that's why I'm addressing both of them.
But there is still a problem.
There is a problem. And the way we solve it, and actually things are getting better and things are going in the right direction, the way we solve it is by making sure that people have jobs, that people can be prosperous, that they're not taxed too heavily. So, for example, national insurance. We're raising the national insurance threshold, so the average worker who pays national insurance will be a couple of £100 better off every year thanks to that national insurance threshold. Because it's not... There's two elements here. There's government support, but there's also allowing people to keep their own money and to actually have a buoyant economy. And the best way you alleviate poverty is by having people in work so people can pay their way in the world and actually have fulfilling and meaningful jobs and raise their families and actually get to keep their own money. So it's not just about government handouts and, oh, government can be doing this, government can be doing that. Yeah, that's part of it and an important part, yeah, and not to be discounted. But a critical element is helping people in work. And we have near full employment in this country and record. We haven't had unemployment this low for 45, 50 years. Specific problem with the island, too much of our work is seasonal. And another specific problem with the island that I want to challenge is higher education. One of the really... Look, we lack leadership, in my opinion. To put it bluntly, look, I love the island. I adore it. And representing it is an absolute labour of love. But I'm also going to be honest, we've lacked leadership on the island for 50 years. We've had great individual leaders, but collectively I think we've made the wrong decisions. The education revolution that's transformed Bournemouth and Portsmouth and Southampton and Brighton and Winchester has passed us by. If you wanted to make a success of your life as a young kid, what did you have to do? You pretty much had to leave the island because you couldn't get a university education here. That is shocking. We've exported our greatest asset, which has been our young people. And we've been doing it since the 1960s. What I want to do, and I'm working with the council and Department of Education, anyone I can, because I have influence, but I don't always have much power. You know, the power of a planning, for example, is with the council. The power of education is with the council and the Department of Education. But as the MP of influence, and I'm trying to use my influence to make sure that we get more higher education on the Isle of Wight. So the young kids, I was at Lane's End Primary School this morning. So when those kids are teenagers, they've got a chance of doing a degree on the island. So they've got a choice whether they, you know, you don't have to leave the island if you want to get a degree in higher education. And we already order some, we already have lots of good courses on the island, and the council is doing really great work in advertising those courses much better. But what I want, for example, is Isle of Wight College, which is doing well. I want to see them have franchise degrees from the University of Portsmouth or the University of Southampton, not just the first 2 years, all of them here. I'd like a university campus in Newport Harbour, where we are now, you know, just on the road, and have dormitories. So for medical students, for people at St Mary's who come in, for the people at the UK Sailing Academy, maybe, for people at the excellent Platform One Music School, where I used to have a really great pitch, for all the people who have appeared in Paleo Dinosaurs at Portsmouth, to have a campus hub here for higher education, because that's where we're letting our young people down, and that's what we need to do more work on. So when it comes to the long term, we need more higher education here, and because housing in the island plan, we're building for the wrong people. We need to be building for islanders. We're not. And we haven't been building for islanders for decades. It's ridiculous.
Okay, I've got two questions. How long is this going to take? I mean, you know, this is... Because people now will be thinking, come on, we've been in the doldrums for a while.
No, we haven't been in the doldrums. How dare you say that? You're talking the island down. Don't talk the island down.
No, I'm not talking the island down. I'm just saying we have been in the doldrums in places. There's lots of things to be shouting about, but otherwise there would be no need for you to be a leader if we've been led brilliantly well over the last 40 or 50 years, you suggested. So we are in a place where... We need to sort things out. We need change.
Really good point. I'm part of a leadership team. We have a really... Let me just answer that because it's critical. Because it's not... One of the nice things... A bad MP takes credit for everything him or herself. A really good MP puts the credit out there. There's a great quote from Ronald Reagan. You can achieve almost anything if you give other people, the right people, the credit. So actually, I'll take this opportunity. We have a good council now and a good council leader in Dave Stewart. And although we've had our differences over the island plan and we're now working together to improve it... I work hand in glove with them. We work together to make sure we got the Columbine building, to make sure we keep shipbuilding on the Isle of Wight. We work together on the Island Line to deliver the deal on the Island Line Railway. So a really big shout out to the council and all those councillors who are doing a great job, and some of the independents as well, people like Carl Love, who's a good bloke, who's one of the candidates for the election. I work very well to support the NHS leadership team here. Maggie and Martin and all those guys, and they do a really important job, and it was their bid that I supported for that 48 million. So it's not just about me. We now have a much stronger leadership team on the island, and what I'm doing is making sure we all push together in the right direction and we know where we're going and we're doing the right thing for our island folks.
Okay, I just want to point something out as well, that we've been supporting the council too, and we've given them their own Talking Council podcast, which was nominated for a National Radio Award this year.
You are a star.
We're doing our bit, and that's what we want to do.
It's fantastic. I love it.
Can you just clarify one stinky moment? One stinky thing? One stinky, stinky question? Just prepare yourself, all right?
Okay.
This might hurt. Okay. We want funds. Yep. You want funds and so on. Yep. But when it came down to voting for more funds to be allowed for councils, especially ours, you voted against it.
No, okay. We vote through a budget every year.
Yeah.
And the government presents, let me finish this, the government presents a budget and we support that budget because it's what we collectively agree. What normally happens, the Labour Party or the Lib Dems put down an amendment to the budget, says give everyone more money. Sorry, we can't, it's a stunt. It's a bit of virtue signalling from the left-wing parties, yeah?
Yeah.
And as regards, and I got asked this by a very nice lady, a nurse, yesterday. She said, what about the pay freeze? Well, I was part of that pay freeze for most of the last decade. I served in the armed forces. Yeah, I took a huge pay cut to go and serve in the armed forces. I was happy to do that. I didn't complain about that because it was my choice. And then I had my pay frozen by the coalition, by the Conservative and Liberal coalition, because as part of austerity, I was one of those public servants that actually had their pay pretty much frozen for 3, 4, 5 years. I accepted it, you know. I didn't particularly. Did I want more pay? But of course, we all do. But I accepted that. So I was one of those people who had their pay frozen by a Conservative government. But I wasn't in the army just for the money. I took a pay cut to go and do that role. And you know, there are other advantages about working in the public service, a sense of duty, sense you're helping your country, and all those other really good things. So do I want to see doctors and nurses and teachers and all these good people earn more? And soldiers? Yes, of course I do, because I was one of them. But under our plans for education, starting salary for teachers is going to be £30,000. And on the island, that's a pretty good wage.
Hey, just giving you the opportunity to answer
the question. It's good. I mean, it's a great question, and I hope I've given you a decent response.
Yeah, no problem. Let's move on to a couple of quick answers, what I think. Brexit. Where do you stand on Brexit?
I voted Leave.
Did you actually vote Leave before you become an MP?
Yeah. I voted Leave as an islander.
Can I ask you a question then?
Yeah.
Because when I voted Leave. I didn't want a deal. I voted Leave, no deal, out of Europe completely. What did you vote for?
I voted to Leave because the important thing, we were going to leave.
But Leave with no deal, just Leave?
No, you see, I think just Leave for me. And if we could leave with a deal. The point is, if we leave without a deal, we're back to free trade, WTO, which is fair enough. But actually, it's not the optimum. The optimum solution is to leave and then strike a good free trade deal that gives us as much freedom as we can, but also allows us as much access. Now, is there a trade-off there? Yes, of course there is.
So just to clarify, you wanted to leave with a deal? Not.
I would prefer to leave with a deal, because I think that is optimal. After the referendum, after the people, 17 million people, over 17 million people, had voted to leave, more than anyone else has ever voted for anything in this country before, if there was then a choice between revoking this ridiculous Lib Dem position, and there isn't a Lib Dem, sadly, to answer that on the island, or leaving without a deal, I would go leave without a deal, because we had to respect the referendum. But if we've got a great deal that all the Brexiteers can live with, and most Remainers can live with, let's do that deal. Because then we maximise our chances of striking a really good free trade deal with the European Union. Look, I'm half German. You know, my granddad was killed, he was a British commander of his regiment in World War II. He was killed by the Nazis. My German granny was murdered by the Soviets. I really like the idea of peace in Europe, because half my grandparents were slaughtered the last time Europe had a major war, and I don't want to see that happening, for example, to my grandchildren.
Sure.
Yeah? But I think we're better off out, but we're better off with the deal and being a really good partner and having a great relationship with the European Union, but not being in it. So like Boris, I'm genuinely very pro-European. I love Europe. It's great. But I don't want to be part of the European Union. And I think sometimes people, especially on the left, confuse those two.
Okay. Can I ask you a big favour? Your phone is interfering, because every time it's going beep, 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 there's something in the mechanism that...
It's on airplane mode. I hope I'm not ruining it.
No, we can hear it when you get a text.
Is it mine?
I've got a message from you from the Isle of Wight Military Museum as well.
Oh, have you?
They've said they've got a specific corner allocated for your family.
Are you being serious?
They've said I've been trying to get you in for years.
No.
Visit them.
Well, they've never invited me.
They said they have. Anyway, go up and see them, because they've got a special... Yeah.
Is that
special
the one section on the road up to Cowes?
That is, yeah.
With the tank outside. It used to have a tank out there, but that's gone now, haven't it?
That's the one. We popped up last week and they said, here's a section here. And we were reading all this history and, you know...
My granddad died in World War II, and he was with the Nottinghamshire Regiment, because the family come from the Isle of Wight in Nottinghamshire.
Right.
And he was leading a Notts Regiment. He was killed in Tobruk, or near Tobruk, in 1942. But his two first cousins, Frank and Charles, they're both from the island. They serve with island regiments. Is Princess Beatrice and the Hampshires. They both died in World War I. They're both island kids. And one was killed. Charles was killed in Gaza, in the Middle East. And Frank was killed on the Western Front.
Fixed link. Where do you stand on that?
Look, I'm marginally against. But actually, it doesn't... When I say it doesn't matter what I believe, let me just explain that, because otherwise people are going to get infuriated, especially the fixed link crowd. We're not going to get the money. If there's a chance... I've had conversations with various transport ministers about this. We're not going to get 2 billion... for a tunnel to connect 120,000 people. To make it commercially viable, we'd have to have a population of at least 500,000. If we want a population of the 500,000, you can forget about the Isle of Wight being a rural, beautiful rural island, because we'll simply become a suburbanised suburb of Southampton and Portsmouth. So it'll fundamentally... If we had the amount of people that would currently make a tunnel viable, it would change the Isle of Wight completely.
All right.
It's important. If the money was there, and we collectively on the island made a decision that we wanted a tunnel, of course I'd go and fight for the tunnel. The money isn't there. I'm not against the feasibility study. Let's
that
get
was
on
my
with
question.
It. Well, let's get on with it.
Yeah.
But the government says, as we're not going to fund it, there's no point having a feasibility study because it costs hundreds of thousands of pounds. The council, for which I'm not responsible, for the council has said, we're not paying, we don't have the money. Nobody is against private individuals collecting money for a feasibility study. And, you know, the campaigner guy who... Frankly, yeah, whatever. The campaigners for the Fixed Link, they just need to go and raise the cash, but they've only raised about £6,000. Well, okay, well, maybe there isn't such a demand for it. I'm not against a feasibility study. It's the government isn't going to pay for one.
As a few people have pointed out, you want a feasibility study plus you want an impact study as well.
Yeah, so impact is really important because if you're going to have a tunnel, look, the idea that you can have a little tunnel that doesn't impact on the surrounding environment is nonsense. If you're going to have one road route in and out to replace the three ferry routes, you're going to have to build dual carriageways probably around Newport.
Okay.
Yeah. You're going to have a huge impact. You're going to have huge and significant pressure to develop the island. We are already under pressure to build too many houses. That is going to be as nothing if we have a fixed link.
Okay. Let me tell you something. I've always said that all of the ferry companies, Hover Travel, Red Funnel, and White Link, none of them get the credit that they deserve, and they do get an awful lot of stuff pushed their way.
Yeah.
Out of frustration, possibly.
Yeah.
I've got to ask this because lots of people have asked me if they would ask you, and I'm asking you in a polite way. So prepare yourself.
Yeah.
Do you benefit from the ferry companies at all?
No. Okay. There are two smears about me that are put out anonymously by two of the candidates, and I wish they'd frankly get out of the gutter. One, that I don't live on the island, that I live in Oxford or Orkneys or out of Mongolia or God knows where. I don't live in Oxford, I lived on the island. I lived on the island for years before I became the MP. So those candidates who are trying to smear me, please stop lying, it's pathetic and pitiful. And actually I take it as a compliment, because if you can't attack my policies, you smear me as an individual.
Okay.
Get a life, that's the first one. Second get a life is that because my cousin is a non-exec director of Red Funnel, somehow I'm in the pockets of the ferry companies. I'm not. I have dozens of second and third cousins. I don't know anything about their financial relationships. And Patrick, the second cousin in question, has been put on the board there so he can actually be a voice for the island, which I would have thought we would welcome. He's also a deputy lieutenant, and he tries to do the right thing for the island. He comes from, you know, he's born and bred island, yeah? I don't gain anything from Whitelink. I don't gain anything from Red Funnel. In fact, I spend most of my time criticising them for their high profit margins. Whitelink don't like me because I published their share structure and got the county press, or the county press ran it as their splash about a year ago, which showed that half the company, they've got a complex tax structure, so they pay no tax, and they've got overseas registration. I can't remember the details off the top of my head. So that really didn't endear me to them, and I actually want the council to buy over half of either Whitelink or Red Funnel, so it can be put in a franchise mode. So actually, I'm going to cut their profit margins dramatically.
Oh,
so
again, votes. So saying, Bob, you're banned.
So again, do I try to get on with them? Fine. But I have very blunt conversations with them, as they know perfectly well. So when it comes to people trying to smear me, and it's two candidates doing it, really, get a life.
Thanks for clearing that up. We'll take a break. You can take a break. We'll come back in a moment.
Our island. Our Vectis Radio. FM 104.6.
Here at The Sign Company Limited, we know how important good signage is in helping your business stand out from the crowd. We pride ourselves on giving our customers a personal service, from our prompt response times to our design and installation. Offering the most comprehensive range of signage services available locally, we are the island's one-stop shop for signs and graphics. From banners to vehicle wraps, The Sign Company Limited can offer the complete solution. Call us now with your inquiry on 520047 or visit our online home at www.thesigncompanyltd.co.uk.
Getting married is expensive, so wouldn't it be great if you could buy a brand new, tagged, fabulous wedding dress for less than one-third of the price? Well, thanks to the closure of a wedding dress shop, now you can. We have around 200 dresses to choose from in sizes 6 to 16. They include crystal, beaded, lace, tulle, taffeta, satin and silk. If you're getting married or know someone who is, ring Friends of the Animals on 522511 to make an appointment to view. We have 60 feet of rails, which includes evening gowns and flower girl dresses. Ring 522 511.
As the nation's leading first aid charity, we at St John Ambulance believe nobody should die. because they needed first aid and didn't get it. Yet only one in five of you would know what to do in the event of an emergency. So why not be the difference in your local community? By volunteering with the St John Ambulance units at either Ryde or Newport, you'll learn life-saving skills which could be the difference between life and death.
Saturday night from 7. Join Dazza D for the mashup. Classic dance tracks and today's dance floor fillers.
Today's dance floor fillers.
And everything in between. The mashup with Dazza D on Vectis Radio 104.6 FM.
Your support matters. We operate thanks to the support of local businesses. If you would like to advertise on Vectis Radio, FM 104.6, contact our team today. Marketing at vectisradio.fm.
The Mid-Morning Show is proudly sponsored by PC Consultants, the island's leading provider of IT service, consultancy and support to businesses, public sector and private clients across the island. Call us at PC Consultants on 01983 811 711 to find out more about our award-winning service.
20 to 1, welcome back, part 2. We've got Bob Seeley. We can't call you MP Bob Seeley because you're not, are you? Is that
no,
officially?
I think I lost my job about 2 weeks ago and I'm trying to get it back.
Well, that's something else I want to bring up, and other people don't see. The people that you have working around you,
yeah,
they must be all on tenterhooks as well, because basically if you don't get re-elected, they're out of work.
It depends. Yes, I mean, that's probably... I mean, they have a great... actually, thank you. I want to thank my team. They are wonderful, and they enable me to do the job to my best ability. So my team, so Ben and Andrew and Joe and Steph, Oscar is no longer with us, but Marissa, I'm really grateful to all of them because they're fabulous.
So
I
just moved your phone.
Should I throw my phone next door?
Just throw your phone out the door. Yeah, it's interfering with everything. You're on one of those low-level payment things, aren't you? It's still doing it.
I put it on airplane mode and then I turned it off. Oh, I tell you what it is. It's my computer.
Oh, it's your computer, is it? Oh, that's what it is. You've lost your phone now. You're going to be all right with that?
Yeah, it's okay. I can never.
It's still. You can't hear it because you ain't got any headphones on. You can hear it, can't you?
Yeah, I can hear it.
I'm really sorry about that. Okay.
That's all right.
This, everything is now...
Connor's got a question for you.
Connor.
My first question is, if I was interested in a career in politics, what advice would you give me?
Well, go and have some experience in politics, but make sure you have a life outside politics. Because although a little bit in the Conservative Party, but especially in the Labour Party, there's a sort of route in via unions, via press offices, by being a policy wonk or going to work for an MP... Okay, it's good to go and make contacts. It's a really interesting life if you're interested in politics. But actually, I think people are bored of people who are just political appointees or parachuted candidates.
Yeah.
And so you need to go and have a life outside politics.
Okay.
So go and find out about politics. Go and work in Westminster. Go and work for an MP for a year or two.
Yeah.
Become a policy wonk. But don't let that become your life. And then you get onto the candidate list, maybe when you're about 30.
Yeah.
Between, I don't know, late 20s, mid 30s, something like that.
Yeah.
But make sure you keep having experience of life. The best thing that happened to me was when I went into the army, and, you know, I only went in full time, bizarrely, when I was 40. I got, you know, wrong way around because you normally do that first in your career.
Yeah.
And I did nearly a decade. And I'm so glad I did that because it has made me a much better public representative as a result of getting all that life experience, but also living in the Soviet Union. So when I was in my early 20s, I was working for the Times as a foreign stringer, foreign correspondent, and I went and lived in the Soviet Union, and I lived there for about four years from, I think, 1990 to 1994, 1995, and I witnessed all the civil wars there, and I covered the Yugoslav civil war a bit, and I, you know, went to Moscow and Kiev and all these other places. And get out and have adventures and have a real life, because it is really good for you in the long run to do that.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll come back to the second question in a mo.
Okay.
Did you want to clarify nurses? I heard interviews on BBC, Sky. I didn't understand what there was. If I don't understand it, and BBC don't understand it, and ITV don't understand it, but we're saying 50,000 nurses, but it's not quite.
Well, they're going to try to stop some nurses leaving. And
that's
really important. So... Okay, I was talking to a GP actually in St James's Square when I was at canvassing last weekend in Newport, and there are reasons why people, nurses and doctors, are thinking of leaving the NHS. With some of them, it's over pension provision. With some of them, it's sort of working practices. With some, it's sort of more money in other fields. So there's ways of keeping people engaged. So what the first thing we need to do is, if we want, because there, I think on the Isle of Wight, there were in St Mary's as of last summer, I talked to the NHS Trust about this, there were 149 nurse vacancies.
Right.
And the more you put the nurses that are there under pressure because of the vacancies, the worse the problem gets. So it becomes a vicious spiral of people leaving because they can't cope with the pressures of work, because there's understaffing, there's agency nurses coming in who may not know the patients as well as nurses with years of experience in St Mary's. So the system, we have to find a way to shore up the system better. So, for example, on the island, there were 149 nurse vacancies. By early next year, they should be under 90. That's in part because we're training up 30 islanders to go and get the qualifications to become nurses. But we're also having more people from the Philippines come in. Now, you can argue for and against that. And you can say, why aren't we employing, getting more people from the island, which I agree with. But actually, we're trying to solve that problem within a reasonable time frame. So we're hiring, specifically going out to find islanders to train them up as nurses, but also getting excellent nurses from the Philippines. And that's going to nearly halve the nurse vacancies. So there's still too many nurse vacancies, but not 149. When it comes to the GPs, big recruitment and training program for GPs, but it does take time to train them. So a lot of that is about keeping the GPs that we have. And with some of them, it's about changing the pension structure or changing the contracts so that actually the people want to stay, because what we can't afford is for GPs to retire early because we lose all that experience and that contact with patients.
Okay. Well, I don't have a problem with Philippines or anything, but I mean, if you're laying there in your sick bed, it don't matter who's going to fix you.
The Filipino nurses actually have a really good reputation as
absolutely,
well.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. Do you get all this confusion over this 50,000 nurses?
Yeah, so, to be honest, I've never been asked it before. I mean, look... I want politics, believe it or not, I know probably people are going to laugh, I want politics to be as honest as possible, because then you have the best quality conversations. I want to get elected because I produce the best arguments and the greatest sort of truth and honesty in what I'm saying. And actually to have claims from any political party that are false or misleading, I'm against. I didn't like that. I wasn't a fan when Central Office did that silly fact-checker stunt a couple of weeks ago. I didn't like that at all. I think it's wrong.
No, I completely agree with that.
I mean, because I get smeared by... I mean, not actually the Labour guy, he has decent character, but I mean, a couple of the candidates are slightly ethically challenged. And because people attack me anonymously, very often by just making up any old rubbish, actually, I feel that, and I really don't like that culture in politics. And the more honest we can make politics, the more that I can fight on my record. And when people attack me, they do so for justifiable grounds, and not because they think I live in Beijing or Hong Kong or something.
Well, all I want is truth, honesty, and you need to care. And if that's you, then put your cross. But you know that's the way I'm looking at it. That's the way I'm looking at it. I want people to look after the future. I want people to look after the kids that have got problems. Yep. You know, people.
Thank you, Vectis Radio, for doing that. You've had. There's a lot of kids in this morning, and you're doing a really great job. So I'm very grateful for your role.
Thank you.
Thank you to Colin.
See, I'm not getting praise. That's thrown me.
Oh, I should do it more often. That's thrown you.
Let's wipe the smile off your face. I've got another question. This is all about Sunday. Sunday was not. I'm not going to try and wipe the smile off it. This is your opportunity.
Well, what's Sunday about?
Sunday was, you were on Sunday Politics Show and you said something about if Labour got in, that they would close.
Well, I'm going to read the Labour manifesto and I'm going to read the Green manifesto, because sadly, one of the problems with these folks is that it's all very well saying, oh, Bob's lying, but actually I quoted their manifestos, so why don't I just get their manifestos up and we can read them.
Okay.
What I said at the time is that both the Labour and the Greens will scrap Ofsted independent assessments, will scrap tests, will scrap leave tables, and will scrap the national curriculum. They'll remove charitable status from Ryde School, which will be significantly increasing its tax burden, and they will fundamentally change the nature of the free school by forcing it to operate under local authority control. And effectively, they'll shut and undermine the culture from Ryde School and the free school. But this is not about the many or the few, it's about everybody. And fundamentally, they have both pledged, both the hard left Greens and the hard left Labour Party, to scrap Ofsted independent assessment, scrap tests, scrap lead tables, and scrap the national curriculum. For that, they basically said, I'm scaremongering, and I think the Green candidate, I said I'm lying. The problem with the Green candidate is actually if you read the manifesto for the Greens, you realise in many ways how extreme they are. And the problem is, reading that manifesto doesn't mean I'm lying. It means I'm quoting accurately that manifesto, and I'll do so now. So let's start with the Labour one. The Labour Party manifesto attacks the narrowing of the curriculum, and they say that they will end the high-stakes testing culture by scrapping SATs, baseline assessments. They say they will, quote, replace Ofsted. They will close the tax burdens enjoyed by private schools, and they will end the fragmentation of our school system by bringing free schools and academies back under control of local authorities. Now,
okay.
They have, and that's the Labour Party.
But
that's Green. Now, let me just finish this because it's really important.
It doesn't actually say they were going to close it, though, does it? I know it's going to be a bit of a burden financially, but it doesn't actually say they're going
to
close it.
Okay, it'll lead to its closure. Either it'll lead to its closure, or the fact is that many parents won't be able to afford to go to Ryde School, because Ryde School is an independent school, actually, it's not expensive. But if it's got to increase its cost by 20-25% to pay this tax, a lot of people won't be able to afford it. And on the island, yeah, my argument is that'll probably lead to it being shut.
Okay.
And the free school will end, because the free school will cease to exist. The culture in the free school, the culture of excellence, will be abolished. So I stand by what I said. I've read you the Labour Party manifesto. Let me read the Green Party manifesto on this. They say we will, quote, free schools from centrally imposed regimes, Ofsted inspections, rigid national curriculum, and league tables. Do you want me to... Is that your background? Do you want me to read that again?
No, you can't.
The Green Party manifesto will, quote, free schools from centrally imposed testing regimes, Ofsted inspections, rigid national curriculum and lead tables. They will replace Ofsted. They will end academisation and bring all schools back under local authority control. And they will remove charitable status from private schools and charge full VAT on fees. It's in their manifestos. They need to own their manifestos, take responsibility for their manifestos. But what every single islander needs to know, and especially every single parent... 9 out of 10 parents know the Ofsted result for their school, and the majority of parents support Ofsted because they know how important independent testing is. Every single parent on the Isle of Wight, every single islander knows that the Labour Party and the Greens will end that Ofsted regime, will end the things that are making schools better, and they will damage education, and they will specifically threaten Ryde School, and they will specifically threaten the free school. And rather than accuse me of lying, they should own up and defend their manifestos.
So threaten, not close.
No, I think it'll lead to its closure.
Right.
If you want to argue about the nuance, fine.
Exactly.
Let's argue about nuance. But they will significantly... Well, they're in the free school. Yeah, because they'll abolish it. They've said so.
Okay.
They'll abolish a free school. There's no argument about that. They said they will in their manifestos. The only nuance here is whether Ryde School will survive. And I was saying it's threatened. Well, let's say that. Its closure is threatened. Yeah, yeah.
All right.
I'll look at that. But this is not about... the few, it's about everybody. Everybody, all parents, like the Ofsted regime, with the majority, overwhelming majority, like Ofsted, and they know the Ofsted results for their schools. Labour and the Greens will scrap it, and both of them represent the hard left, and they're not the friends of good teachers, and they're not the friends of parents and pupils.
Do you want a quick comment on the school that did close this year, East Cowes?
To be honest, I mean, the occasionally schools close, and look, in the West Wight, we're battling one at the moment in Yarmouth, and Yarmouth parents have said to me, you know, what's happening with Yarmouth School? The problem is we've had fewer kids, and one of the reasons we have had fewer kids is for the last 20 years, we have not built for young families on the island, so families tend to move away. So one of the reasons we've got falling school numbers is because our demographic is skewed, so we have fewer and fewer young people on the Isle of Wight. So it's really difficult there because sometimes you have to make adjustments. Do I want Yarmouth School to close? No, absolutely not. But the reality is the majority of people who go to Yarmouth School are from Freshwater. So, and if we've got the offer to rebuild Freshwater, which we have, and for the government to put in millions of pounds of extra investment into Freshwater, well, certainly hundreds of thousands, then we should take that opportunity because we'll rebuild Freshwater School. We'll take the culture of excellence in Yarmouth School, put it in Freshwater School, and because the majority of kids that go to Yarmouth School are from Freshwater, it'll mean fewer car journeys and more walking to school for kids, which is also better for them as well. So look, I'm not going to, there are some candidates who are just going to promise you the earth. I'm not going to do that because, you know, please God, there's a chance that I might win on December the 12th. And in a year's time, I don't want you to turn around to me and basically said you made a load of promises you can't keep. If I make a promise, I want to be able to know damn sure that I've got a realistic chance of delivering that, if not a certain chance. So when it comes to the studio school as well, I'm sorry that shut, but I think there are reasons why this happened.
Okay, Connor, question.
Okay, my next question is, as a young person, why should I vote for you? What would you do for young people on the island?
That's a really good question, Connor, and let me see if I can remember. Firstly, higher education. I know we've covered that.
Yes.
We are really pushing for higher education, because what pains me is that if you want to go to a university, you're probably going to have to leave the Isle of Wight. You could do your first 2 years via the Isle of Wight College before you go on to Chichester or somewhere else.
Yeah.
But I want you to have more options for higher education on the Isle of Wight. So yes, that's the first thing. Mm-hmm. And we've betrayed our young people now for generations, for decades, by not doing that. So that's the first point.
Yeah.
Before that, though, we're also pushing really hard to improve schooling on the island.
Yeah.
Now, this Conservative government, you'll have £5,000 per head for secondary school pupils, £3,750 rising to £4,000 for primary school.
Yeah.
So people will get above inflation, pay more money above inflation. I know that teachers are angry, some, because although more money's been going into schools, in some cases it has not kept pace for inflation. But the rises now will.
Mm.
Also, I mean, I got £150,000 for a primary school maths project, which has raised mathematics standards in 19 primary schools, which I'm really delighted about as well. It's £150,000 that I got with the council that we put in a joint bid that I then argued for.
Mm.
So, giving you more choice over higher education is the first one, Connor.
Yeah.
Secondly, the island plan. We don't build for islanders. We haven't been building island housing for islanders for way too long, and there are so few affordable houses now. I want to halve the number of houses being planned to be built, about 300 a year, but I want 90% plus to be built for you.
Yeah.
And for older folks who have no... If you're a Mrs. Miggins and you're living in a bungalow at the moment, you have no choice. And if you can't, if your husband's passed away, your spouse, you have no choice. You either stay in the bungalow or you go into a nursing home. There's no sheltered accommodation on the island. Extraordinary. Mm. Absolutely extraordinary. So the second thing I need to do is make sure that we build one and two bedroom properties for you, not three and four bedroom properties on greenfield sites.
Hey, look, we need to hurry you now because he needs to get his question and you need to tell us why we're voting for you.
You're so right. I'm waffling.
And that's
the
all right.
Third point is that make sure we get better jobs on the island, and we've been doing that because we saved the 300 shipbuilding jobs at Venture Keys by making sure that the council can own that property and we lease it to the shipbuilding company there so it doesn't get sold off at a hotel development or for housing.
Bob, Connor, what's your last question?
My last question is, if money was no object, what would be the first thing you would change?
Gosh. I think I'd probably rebuild St Mary's.
Rebuild St Mary's?
Yeah, I'll make sure we have the best hospital we can.
Promise?
If money was no option. Look, yeah. We've got 48 million this summer, but if I could have got 480 million, I would have done.
Okay.
But I would say it was the first decent investment for 20 years, and the Ireland Line, the 26 million for Ireland Line, it's the first money we've had for Ireland Line for 50 years.
Hey, look, Bob, stop fidgeting. Get on that microphone and tell us why we should vote for you.
Thank you. Vote for me because it's been such a privilege to represent the island, and it is absolutely a labour of love. We've had some good victories in the last 2 years. Safe Sandown School, made sure the Department of Education didn't shut it, working with the council and the community. We've got priority funding status from the Arts Council. We've got the island recognised as an island by Whitehall. We've got 20 million for Ryde Railway Pier. We had 40 million for the NHS. We had 26 million for Ireland Line. We've got the site in East Cowes, East Cowes site for shipbuilding. We've got a commitment verbally given in Parliament from Boris to secure better funding for public services. And we've got a great maths primary school maths project as well. So I'm already delivering a better island deal. And the promises that I made, the fundamental promise that I made the folks of the Isle of Wight when they elected me 2.5 years ago, was I would get the Isle of Wight higher priority in Whitehall, and I would make sure the civil servants and the politicians listen to us more. And hand on heart, I can say I've achieved that. And I'll carry on doing it if you give me half a chance. And I'll deliver Brexit.
Okay. How worried are... Because I've got to be honest with you, the other four that have been in so far, they're all kind of relaxed. You strike me as being passionate and prickly. If that's how I was going to say it, what's Bob like? He's passionate and prickly.
Can we say passionate and energetic? You're right. I probably rely slightly too much on nervous energy, but it just might be I've had lots of coffee. Because I've had a bit of a cold, I didn't actually sleep last night, so I've been dousing myself with strong coffee this morning.
I don't know if you've had a cold. You'll have cancelled.
No, it's okay. No, I do. Listen, I don't want to let people down, so if my voice conks out, at least I don't have to do any more hustings.
Well, obviously, you've got another 2 weeks of this, 2 weeks of pressure.
Will my voice survive?
Well, will it survive?
I mean, don't know. We don't know.
So, what happens? Just say, for instance, have you got a plan if you don't get re-elected?
To be honest, no. I'm just going full pelt to talk to as many. Look, I talk to as many folks as possible. Even, you know, when I'm the MP, I go, you know, full steam ahead, whatever's happening. So I mean, we'll see what happens. I'm just going to do my best, and I'll fight for every vote I can. Take nothing for granted.
Okay.
I'm very happy to be judged on my record. I want to be judged on my record.
Do you think the media give you a fair crack?
Yeah, most of the time. Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, you can always, any politicians who complain
you've
about the
media. You've gone off microphone.
Sorry,
again. Look.
I never complain about the media. I never complain about the media. I'm very lucky. I get to represent the best place in the world.
Okay. Yeah?
And some fabulous people. So I'm incredibly lucky.
I mean, I know that, I don't know, some years ago, you know, before, you know, whilst Andrew Turner was MP, people used to say that you were being groomed for the job.
God, I wish. I mean, nobody's ever groomed me for anything. Everything I've done in my life, I've had to fight for.
Have you got a good team around you?
I've got a fabulous team around me. No, listen, the idea of being groomed for the job is a nonsense. I mean, when it came up, I went for it, but to be honest, I never expected it. I was living in the island not expecting to be the MP. I thought, well, if I'm a chance, it'd be great to be a local council. Actually, I just wanted to live here because I love it.
Okay, look, Bob. Good luck, and thanks for coming in. And
thank you, thank you. Sorry for fidgeting.
Thank you, Colin. Yeah, you can fidget where you like now.
Vectis Radio, FM 104.6.